Shut up and sit down.
This is our weekly hockey podcast with Brian Metzer of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Stanley Cup Finals going on right now. Kyle Dubas in as Director of Hockey Operations for the Penguins. Lots to talk about with Mets. Let's do that first and foremost, Mets, by talking about what we saw last night in the final between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers. What'd you think of the hit by Tkachuk on Eichel and the ensuing decision by the on-ice refs?
I feel like the hit was the it probably was fine. It looked terrible in the moment, but it was one where the player kind of loses his footing. And it almost looked like Eichel leaped into it, but it was more like he tripped and lost. He toe-picked a bit and went into it. And then if he had no problem with it by his post-game commentary, I'm not going to have a problem with it either. I thought it was a little bit brutal, but I don't think he went for his head per se. It was a guy in a vulnerable spot based on him tripping and falling. And it looked ugly, though, didn't it, Tim? It was a little bit scary in the moment, especially seeing a guy with all that upper, you know, shoulder, neck, head issues in the past, leaving the ice immediately. That could have been really bad news for Vegas. And it seems like the officiating has been very interesting in this series, but that's been the case throughout the entire playoffs. And I guess it's worth noting that Matthew Tkachuk now just leads the series in game misconducts and nothing more than that.
It is inconsistent, to say the least, and I still think that this goes back to the default of, if it looks bad, we're just going to call it, unless it's Jacob Trouba.
Yeah.
And then Jacob Trouba can do whatever he wants.
Of course, you and I have covered that ad nauseum this season. I mean, he has carte blanche to destroy any and everyone. And in this situation, I just looking back at it, I mean, in the exact moment, okay, yeah, boy, that's frightening. But you got to consider that kind of stuff. Guys are moving at a high rate of speed. Guys are falling. Guys are tripping. And in this case, it was just a bad luck play, because if Eichel doesn't lose his footing there, Tim, I doubt that it looks near as bad. It's probably still a huge collision. Both guys may have even fallen down. It's the fact that Eichel was kind of supermanning through the air when he came in contact with a locomotive named Matthew Tkachuk.
Does Florida come back from this?
I think that's going to be very hard to do. I mean, I've learned not to count them out in these playoffs. And, you know, I got to stick with my pick, because I did pick them to win, even though I hedged a little bit and said Vegas looks pretty good and the layoff, etc. But all that said, you go down 2-0, you lose 2 in Vegas the way that they did. And they just, I think what the problem is here, they don't have a chance of doing anything, Tim, unless they get back to doing what they were doing during the first three rounds. They weren't a team that was gooning it up. They weren't a team that was just trying to be physical all the way to a Stanley Cup. They got timely goal scoring. They were able to have clutch players rise to the occasion. And when you look at this series, it's Vegas doing almost what – in game one, I don't feel like they dominated all the way up until maybe the paddle save made by Adin Hill, who, my God, he's been outstanding in these playoffs, certainly better than Sergei Bobrovsky. And that's saying something, because Bob was just so wonderful in the run-up to this. But Vegas, from that point on, kind of stole game one from them and took it from their midst and closed it out in very impressive fashion, dominated game two, and Florida looked like they were just sitting in the corner grooming as a cat would. They didn't have an answer. So we'll see what they do. But their home ice will help them a little bit. I just think it's going to be a tough nut to crack for Florida to reel off four of the next, you know, handful of games here, just based on the way they played those first two.
If Vegas walks away as the Stanley Cup champion, and we're forecasting a little bit here, probably to our next conversation, do you feel fulfilled by that as a hockey fan? Or I guess we should, I mean, given their consistency throughout the regular season, right?
They were one of the better teams all season. I think, if anything, if you're a Penguins fan watching this, it gives you hope that you don't necessarily have to find an A number one goaltender. If you play the right way in front of them and you find the right people to work with said goaltenders, because that's been the case with Vegas, because they've had a very consistent team, to your point, Tim. They have stars, they have good role players, but across the board, it was a very evenly built team. There's not a guy with 100 points and everybody else has 50. This is a team, you know, with a number of, you know, 50, 60, 70 point type scorers. This is a team with a mobile defense. They have the defense get active and into the play. I mean, guys like Shea Theodore are there. Peter Angelo's there. I mean, it's been a fun team to watch all season. But the goaltending thing, to use four different guys in the run like this and through their season and into the playoffs, that just doesn't happen. I mean, we've heard of tandems, but kudos to Sean Burke. Maybe that's a guy Kyle Dubas should look at and say, hey, can we steal Sean Burke to work with goalies in Pittsburgh? So whenever we start playing, you know, the roulette game here with who we're going to plug and play with, that we can have somebody really coach them up and get them ready. But it's, I would say it's a not a shock to see them win, Tim, but I don't know that it's going to fulfill hockey fans, because the fact that they took about a week and a half to get the final going, there are probably certain people around the world that don't even realize it's being played.
I think that's fair. Good old Original Six hockey, Vegas and the Florida Panthers, that's for sure. Brian Metzer, Penguins Radio Network. Okay, you mentioned Dubas. Where is he going to go for a general manager? I mean, who fits the profile? Who's going to want to come here to play second fiddle but have the general manager tag, which sounds to me like a lot of responsibility without any potential praise coming your way?
Yeah, I'm guessing you might see him identify more of somebody that it's kind of going to be like when Jim Rutherford had Jason Botterill doing the cap, or they had Jason Karmanos doing cap and analytics while they made all the big decisions. They obviously took some words from them and took some input from them, but it almost wouldn't be crazy to see a scenario like Rutherford had when he had Fitzgerald, Guerin, and Botterill, where they all were like capable of being a GM technically, but they all kind of were the feeder source to him to give him information to help his decision-making. Now, there's Penguins fans licking their chops thinking that maybe you could still get a Matthew Darche, who was a runner-up for this job. If he wants to be a general manager, could Dubas go out and say, hey, you know, you're a young guy, you're bright, I think you would fit my mold here. But there are a number of guys in Toronto that are going to become available as of July 1, and I think he's going to have an eyeball there. Some of his lieutenants from that organization come to mind. And it's just going to be very interesting. Will he go new or will he go familiar? Guys that he knows he can work with. And it may be a situation where he wants to go totally new. And if that's the case, then maybe a name or two that was a finalist for this job come up in conversation. I'm just not sold on the fact that he's going to quickly hire a general manager, Tim. I kind of feel like, yeah, that's a plan, but I think it's going to depend on how much fun and how it is going through the period up to the draft, and then the beginning stages of NHL free agency. Because I doubt he's going to hire somebody the first week of July just based on the fact that free agency is going to be full bore at that point. So I think he'll just be there kind of manning this ship himself and say, okay, now we get towards the end of July into August maybe, and he'll consider a little bit more fully. But maybe he just keeps the helm himself this season. And see how, you know, we'll see how it goes.
You know, interesting. I hadn't considered it going that long. But, yeah, I mean, he knows how to be a GM if he's got the scouting staff built around him. I suppose they could hire who they want to hire and then decide who they like and give them a promotion for the next season, right?
Yeah, he could acquire talent in the front office, which it sounds like that's what he wants to do. I know he was on with Mark yesterday afternoon, and that's kind of what he said. He goes, I'm not looking to just revamp on the ice. I want to revamp this organization and bring in talent at all levels, bring in, you know, hockey ops people, bring in training staff. I mean, when you look at the names of the people he fired, one of which was the individual that Hextall brought in that was essentially head of their conditioning and fitness and training that came out of the NBA. So once she was relieved of duties, that tells me he wants to hire his own, you know, nutrition type person and somebody to focus on all of the all the fitness of hockey, if you will. So it's going to be an intriguing watch to just see how he kind of layers the organization with people that he feels comfortable with from top to bottom. And that's going from your bottom six forwards and your bottom two D pair all the way up through the person that's ultimately going to report directly to him as potentially a general manager.
I just think he did in the press conference. I keep hearing he won the press conference. How exactly did he do that? Simply by not being Ron Hextall or what?
I think that this city was so, I guess, maligned by the tenure of Hextall and Burke that, you know, you could have had somebody up there, like one of those little wind-up monkey toys with the symbols, and they'd have been like, he won the press conference. But he did. I mean, when you say that, I think it's just because of the fact that he seemed so prepared, which the last GM didn't. He was bright. He was intellectual. He could articulate his thoughts fluently. He could explain his moment, in the moment right there in the room, as well as already start to articulate a plan. I don't think the last group ever really had a chance to do that or chose not to do that. And so when you hear this professional-looking, bright young man sit there and kind of lay it all out from top to bottom and already start to be able to talk pretty intelligently about his goaltending situation, talk about Jari, talk about the plan for plugging that hole, talk about the big three, etc., I think that that is what impressed people. Now, does that mean he won the press conference? Well, I don't like to say it that way. I'll just say I was impressed by it. But what we're really going to be waiting to see is, are you impressed by the moves that he begins to make here? And that's when the orange is peeled, so to speak, Tim. So for right now, I think he did a great job there. It was one of the better introductory press conferences for a new management person in Pittsburgh Penguins history, probably. I mean, we've seen some good ones. I was still impressed looking back at Ray Shiro's hire at the time. We all loved when Craig Patrick came on, and those guys accomplished some great things. Jim Rutherford, at the early moments of his tenure, left people wanting and ended up winning two cups. But then the follow-up people just kind of continued down a bad path. So I think that people were so disappointed with where it was that they were so overly impressed with where it's headed.
That's an important thing to point out, because I think upon further review, we, canonize Rutherford, and we sort of forget how dubious everybody was of that hire and that entire hiring process, by the way, up to and including Mike Johnston, in the moment. Like, we kind of lose that perspective of time, don't we?
Oh, we definitely do. I mean, the first season here in Pittsburgh, the first thing he did was, now I know it worked out, that trade ends up being a home run. He trades James Neal for Patrick Hornquist. People were ready to revolt in the moment because, oh no, you lost Nealer, that worked out. But all of his other moves were a little suspect. That first season, he didn't have good cap management. They had to play with five defensemen down the stretch, which put them in a bad spot because Chris Letang got hurt without enough runway left in the season to use long-term IR, so you had no cap space. That sounds familiar, doesn't it, Tim, that you don't have enough to ice your best lineup? That was the exact same thing that we saw happen this past season with Ron Hextall. So then you stir in the fact that a lot of people didn't agree with Shiro even being terminated. They heard all the rumors of David Morehouse and Ray knocking heads, and Morehouse obviously won that war, and they got their guy with Rutherford because he wanted to bring him in. So all of that said, it wasn't great to begin with. It ended up working out perfectly. I don't know that there's ever been a GM that put together, five trades or whatever it was that worked perfectly for an organization the way Jim did, picking up all those players through the 16 season, all the way down to, some role players. I mean, everything he did just came up roses, and it worked for those 2 years. I think that even that kind of clouded people's memory a bit. But the beginning stages, to your point, of Rutherford were not good. And I think this Dubas situation is going to start way better than that one did, just based on the fact of him being an aggressive general manager. He's got his finger on the pulse of the league. I mean, everybody you ask about him is so impressed when they meet him. Everybody around the league, even outside the Penguins organization, is excited. And I saw people in Philadelphia crying last night on Twitter saying that everyone just keeps doing podcasts about Kyle Dubas and talking about the Penguins and Kyle Dubas. The Stanley Cup Finals going on. Why don't people pay attention to that, acting as if this was some pandemic of the league that they can't even promote their Stanley Cup enough because it's so regional in terms of coverage that people don't even care outside of the markets that are involved. And we just kind of address that.
Finally, Mets, this attempt to rebuild the team and trying to win in the present, how feasible is that? I mean, I know that was the charge given to Brian Burke and Ron Hextall when they first got to Pittsburgh. It quickly devolved into just win now. And as a result, I think the Penguins are even more barren at the farm system than they were. And certainly when it comes to draft assets as well. So how does Kyle Dubas do two things at once?
Well, I think that was a little misconstrued, maybe, in the way he laid it out. And he addressed this again on that interview he did here in the city on 105.9. He pretty much said the initial goal here is to build around the big three and give them a chance to win you know, in the twilight of their career. He believes in them. He believes in his coach that he inherited. So we'll see if that holds true for the long term. But he wants to do what he can to give them the best chance at success. And then the second tier of his whole, you know, process here will be to also find ways to acquire pieces to help shepherd in the next era of Penguins hockey. So I think that they're going to focus still on winning now, but he also seems like he might be a guy that might not give up assets as much to give them a chance late in a season if he doesn't believe it's there. But he spoke to wanting to give them the chance. So I think they'll focus on winning, but they'll also try and cultivate some talent that they can bring into the bottom levels of the organization. One line he said yesterday in the interview was that he wants to find, you know, even goaltending prospects to put in the pipeline here in Pittsburgh because he knows it's a little bit barren. He goes, some guys that aren't even really draft eligible yet, we have to start to identify so that we can acquire them and bring them in to maybe be the future goaltender of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I don't know that we've ever heard any Penguins general manager say, I'm going to build a staff that's going to focus on finding guys that aren't even draft eligible yet. That might be the first time I've heard that. So we know that's what scouting is, but I don't think I've heard anyone actually make it a priority. So I think he'll focus on the win now while still just kind of finding diamonds in the rough until he has to do a full rebuild or a retooling, as he called it.
Mets, thanks. We'll do it again at least one more time next week, and then we'll see how long the Panthers can keep this thing going, all right?
Yeah, it's, I think, going to be an interesting week, Tim. Will they continue to melt down and throw mitts and all this kind of stuff, or will they focus on playing some hockey? Bobrovsky looked like he was just, you know, calling for death on the bench last night after he got the hook. So that's not a good sign because he was such a huge key to their success. But you're right. We'll see how much they give us more to talk about here.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network.